Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to the Saturday, May 26, 2018 edition of the PW Torch Livecast, aka The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. I am, of course, Rich Fan, and because this is a celebration of the 30-year anniversary of Minoru Suzuki, I would be remiss if I did not start with Kazenin Nare. We welcome you to chat with us. We welcome you to email us. We welcome you to tweet, text, smoke signal, send money. Send help, send whatever you need, because for the next 60 minutes, we're going to be talking about one of the greatest wrestlers in the history of the sport, one of the best shoot fighters in the history of sport, and a man who has transcended every avenue by which he decided to hang his hat professionally. And it is with great pleasure I do this, but I do not do it alone. This week, I am joined by my main man, Ersin Dirac, and we're going to talk about Mr. Suzuki with the love and affection of a thousand suns. Now, if you want to join in, feel free to email us at pwtdive@gmail.com or give us a call at 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. Ersin, welcome to the show, my man, and thank you for being my co-pilot on this tumultuous journey through Suzuki land.
Rich, I'm glad to be here, dude. Thank you so much, man. Thank you for having me.
No problem. And for the folks who have might have heard you when we did the roundtable together for New Japan, I think it was New Japan. Yeah. Why don't you tell them a little bit about what you're doing at the Torch, what you do in general, and what gets you into New Japan Pro Wrestling, and particularly Minoru Suzuki?
Well, for the PW Torch, I cover Ring of Honor, and I also cover New Japan, and I have a podcast. It's called PW Torch NJPW Lioncast. It's on Thursdays. It's unlike you live. It's not live. We're pre-taped. We're pre-taped, dude. It's, you know, we're not. But yeah, we're only on our this coming up week will be our third episode. Last week we did a review of Best of Super Juniors nights 1 through 4. So that's up on the Torch for VIP members. If you want to check that out, please do. And also, if you're into Ring of Honor, my Ring of Honor reports are up there as well. What gets me into New Japan, man, I love the presentation of the product. It's more presented as a sport, and I really like the way the Japanese audiences treat it as such, you know, and they seem to have a lot of respect for the players of the game. And yeah, so that's what I dig about New Japan, just the presentation. And also, I really truly feel that the main event level of New Japan is the best professional wrestling going on the planet today, in my opinion, and has been for the past few years. That's just my personal opinion. I'm sure a lot of your listeners may share that opinion, or they may disagree, but that's just my opinion. That's what I love about New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Awesome. And thank you, obviously, for being on, because this is Minoru Suzuki's one of my favorite wrestlers on this planet, and being able to talk with someone about him as opposed to me gushing endlessly makes for better listening. Obviously, we have some callers who are going to be able to call in, some emailers, etc. But I did want to just give a shout out to my boy Mike Sempervivi. He originally was going to be the Shawn Michaels to my Marty Jannetty, but life got in the way, and he is now on assignment. But at some point this week, I'm going to try to do a VIP with him as well. To kind of continue the Suzuki love. So, Urson, let's talk a little bit about the man. A lot of people had their introduction to how good Suzuki was as a wrestler if they were newly initiated to New Japan by way of AJ Styles' arrival a few years ago. But if you go back, I usually recommend, if people want to see a great Suzuki match, there was a Power Warrior, Kensuke Suzuki versus Minoru Suzuki match back, I want to say in 07. I want to say it was during that year's G1, and that was a pretty darn good match where you kind of see the style. And for those of you who don't know, Minoru Suzuki is a guy who has gone in Pancrase, King of Pancrase, trained formally under the God of Wrestling, as he's known in Japan, Carl Gotch. And that's why he uses the Gotch-style pile driver. And so this is a guy who has a blend of kind of like when you look at Gentleman Jack Gallagher, a mix of the MMA and a mix of the pro wrestling, and he does it, or even Zack Sabre Jr., in a way that seems realistic. And I don't know about you, Orson, but the first few times I saw Suzuki, it was a little jarring because I thought he was being less than agreeable to his opponents in the ring. Like, I thought he was not necessarily shooting on them, but he wasn't taking ropes. He wasn't going to be Irish whipped. He was little in things that you would normally see in the pro wrestling logic, he would refuse to partake in, and that made for a style clash, pardon the pun, between a lot of the pro wrestlers in Suzuki. What were your thoughts when you first saw him?
Absolutely, man. And a big shout out and God bless Wade Keller for putting a live microphone in front of me. That man needs 1,000 blessings. Man, you know, that's the thing about Suzuki. Like, there is nobody, for my money, that works the shoot fighter gimmick as well as he does. I mean, nobody comes to my mind that works that gimmick as well or has. I mean, if somebody, you know, knows of another wrestler that's does or is close, let me know. But I mean, for my money, that's the hook with, you know, Suzuki, is that he's a, you know, he comes off as a legitimate badass guy. And yeah, like nobody does that like he does. The way he carries himself, you know, just like Kazanin Inoue, you know, I mean, that's the GOAT theme, right? I mean, there's no better wrestling music than that, huh? I got pumped up with just you playing it at the beginning. Like, I want to punch a wall or something.
And I'm sure for people that have listened before to my open, I try to usually keep it even keeled, but I was fired up coming out. You've got Kazenina Ray coming out. I mean, I go back to his Wrestle Kingdom entrance where she sang him down to the ring. I mean, you can't get more. That was the first time I saw him excited about something. He gave her a little fist pump and a nod, and it was on.
When he comes, you know, when he comes to the ring, it's like no other guy. I mean, you know, he carries himself with. You hear that a lot, you know, when people dissect wrestling and talk about pro wrestling, they talk about how guys carry themselves. Well, hey, man, nobody carries themselves better than Minoru Suzuki. You know, right when he comes through the curtain, he looks like he's, you know, he's going to kill somebody. You know, he's going to seriously hurt somebody. And then when he gets into the ring, you know, his style, like you said, backs it up, and he looks like he's really shooting on his opponents, which – you know, you just, that's not something that you're going to see a lot of, especially in Western wrestling, you know?
Yeah, it's a nice blend, because when you see him work, he is so vicious, so violent. One of the things I wanted to put up, but it was a little too long, and since it's subtitled, it doesn't really work well for a live cast. But his chat after he beat Hiroshi Tanahashi for the Intercontinental title, where he talked about how he broke him down physically. And for the fans in the arena that were clapping as if this was a good match, you're idiots, because I want to hurt this man and you're cheering me on to hurt your hero more. And they started booing him. And in the United States, I could almost guarantee someone does a promo like that and you're going to cheer the crap out of him, because you're like, yeah, this is a bad dude. This man will rip your arms off and beat you with him. In my perfect world, you know, away from like a video game like WWE 2K or something like that, if you could just have the prime Steve Austin glass shatter stomping down the ring, go up against Suzuki somewhere, and they just brawl for 35 minutes, they'd cut to the crowd and I would be bawling as I just take in all the beauty that there is for that match. Like, he's just, yep. It's magnificent.
Yeah. And you're totally right. You know, for the listeners and stuff, if you came into Suzuki, like you kind of referenced that G1 match with AJ, that was probably 3 or 4 years ago. He had a lot of people. Generally, when I'm scouring the internet, generally people talk about, you know, the New Japan stuff, which I guess is, man, I'm really bad with the years, so I'm sorry, guys. Like, 2010-ish, I guess, is when he came to New Japan. But yeah, I mean, before that, he had some great matches in Noah and All Japan. I mean, he was All Japan Triple Crown champion and had some killer title defense matches there before New Japan. And he had... I don't believe he was the Noah champion, the GHC champion, but he did have title shots.
Oh, he was. Oh, he was, yeah. That was one of the big things. Suzuki Gun took over Noah and basically declared that you're not getting your title back. And it was a really cool story, because you had guys like Marufuji, you had guys who were just like completely dumbfounded by how do you get past this guy and how do you get past the cheating of Suzuki-gun. And that's why for me, and you know, when we come back, I'm going to get into this more. There's one thing I think that's left for Suzuki to do, and I'll tell you guys what that is when we return to the live cast.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive with Rich and Urson. We're talking Minoru Suzuki. We're talking the history, the mystery, the magic, the majesty of this violent gentleman. And we'd like to talk with you. So give us a call, area code 515-605-9345. Now, one thing we haven't talked about yet is the dynamic hair Suzuki has. Give it the little divots, the little ball with the mohawk and the faux hawk and all sorts of things. And while I don't do that because my day job wouldn't allow it, I do try to keep myself with a close shave thanks to the fine folks at Harry's. Harry's stands behind the quality of their blades, but they know switching razors isn't an easy decision. So they created a trial offer. If you can mosey on down on the internet streets to harrys.com/PWTorch, you'll be able to find out why Harry's founders were fed up with overpaying for expensive razors with unnecessary features. They knew a shave that came with a great shave comes down to great blades, made with sharp, durable steel that lasts. And that's why they bought a factory that's been making some of the highest quality blades in the world for over 95 years. By selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's can offer the blades at a much lower price than the leading brand, just $2 per blade compared to four more. And of course, they come with a quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let Harry's know within 30 days and they'll give you a full refund. Get a $13 trial value set with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. An ergonomic weighted handle, 5-blade razor with lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. You must go to harrys.com/PWTorch. Make sure you go to harrys.com/PWTorch to redeem your offer and let them know I sent you to help support the show. So, when last we met, Urson and I were talking about Minoru Suzuki, and I said there's one thing that's left. And for me, Urson, that is winning the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, because then he could be the only man who's won on that delightful little island, the IWGP, Global Honored Crown, King of Pancrase, and of course, Triple Crown. That level of ownership would be delightful to me if I could borrow the Matt Hardy.
Yeah, and man, I don't know. I don't have the answer to that question, if it's going to happen or not. But it sure would be nice if it could. I felt like there was some opportunities in the past where he could have had it for a short time. I'm not sure, but like I said, wow. It would really be nice if he could get it.
Yeah, I mean, you have a guy, he's won, like I said, he's won everything else. My man's won everything else. He's just got that one little thing. And given the tight and relatively, not necessarily, I don't want to say safe because that's not fair to Gato, but it's they keep it on station. They keep it on schedule. They don't necessarily give a title because you need a title. But if there's a storyline for a 48-year-old man to win the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, there's definitely one to be had with Mr. Suzuki.
Yeah, that's true. That New Japan is not into booking, pat on the butt championships. But yeah, if there was ever one that they could do, it would be Suzuki for sure. And yeah, man. By the way, that Pancrase stuff, that was the first time I ever saw Suzuki. Was I had friends that were into MMA, and back in the early 90s, mm-hmm. they would do tape trade, and we would get – not me. I'm not really into mixed martial arts, but they were, and they would get these VHS tapes. And that was the first time I ever saw him, was in the 90s, King of Pancrase with Ken Shamrock and stuff like that. But that was a work, though, right? That wasn't –
Oh, that yeah. It was like work shootboxing, but he also moved around in the freelance and the MMA stuff, because basically what happens is he was a guy who followed like Fujiwara and that family, and going into like the UWF and like the idea of the catch wrestling. So you were wrestling, but it was shoot, but it looked like a different kind. It was like that nascent, that prepubescent fighting. And it was something where they did a pretty good job doing it, because the way they worked it, it didn't look like, oh, wow, you just went down to the dumbest fight ever. In fact, when I was in New Orleans for WrestleMania, getting to see Matt Riddle's Bloodsport reminded me a little bit of CM Pancras, especially seeing Suzuki in the main event. So it was a situation where, like, you could see guys are like, they're still grappling, they're still doing things. And so that opened the way. And once they opened the door, then traditional true MMA was able to kind of come into the fold on the bigger stage.
Man, I didn't know you were down here. You were in my city, man. You could have.
I know.
Man,
we didn't know each other well enough then. That's the thing about pro wrestling love. Like, next time I'm in your city, I'm tracking you down. Like, for
absolutely,
me,
man.
It's like the best thing about going to a city where there's someone you know there and you're going to go see a wrestling show is you get to see from a local's perspective what's cool and what isn't. Like, for me, just a quick diversion for those of you who just wanted Suzuki love. Like, in New Orleans, I'm not a big – like, I don't drink, but I like the – I wanted to get the experience of going down Bourbon Street, seeing the people, the craziness. And one of my good buddies, Cam, of the East Coast cast and also Yumi and Wrestling here on the Torch, was participating in a wrestling dress-up contest, and he dressed up as a member of the Nation of Domination. And it was amazing to see Bourbon Street and WrestleMania wrestling fandom like coalesce, because it was like you had the same people, but instead of like, how can I put it? Like, you have the tourists and they're coming in to just revel. And then you have pro wrestling fan tourists who are coming to revel, but they're dressed like Hillbilly Jim and D'Lo Brown. And then you have the regular locals and the people who are working Bourbon Street, who I'm sure, like, listen, I get that I'm here as an exotic dancer. Why is this guy walking around with buttless chaps with a Val Venus shirt on? Like, what's going on here? Like, I'm sure they're freaking out in their own minds, but they're like, keep it cool, keep it cool. This is just another customer. And so, yeah, it was amazing to see the sights and sounds. And I wish I had more time to explore. The only thing I got to do was go to the World War II History Museum, which I thought was amazing.
Man, I'm glad you had a good time. I wish, I know I'm being selfish, but I wish that I had so much fun that I wish that that could be in New Orleans every if we do that every 4 years, that'd be great.
I'm sure they will, though, because, I mean, they're going back to New York, and I feel like they're going to start avoiding being too adventurous with their sites, and they can kind of pick and choose the places that treated them the best.
Yeah, yeah, for real.
All right, so now before we go too far down the road, I do want to grab our caller. My man Kylan did his homework for the week, and he wanted to make sure he got on. Kylan, welcome to the Deep Dive. What do you have for us this fine Saturday?
Thank you very much, Rich. It is an honor to be here with you and Urson this week. I tried to put my own special spin on this assignment this week, as I normally like to do. So we are going to take a special journey with this first question. I hope you're going to like this. So here we go. And my first question for this week is, which of these six heel persona wrestlers would you compare Minoru Suzuki to, and why? Now, like I said, there are six, so stay with me. The Loose Cannon, Brian Pillman. Handsome Harley Race. Samoa Joe. Stan Hansen. Mid-South Bruiser Bob Sweetan. The Legend Killer version of Randy Orton. And who was my last one? You know what? Scrap the last one. I think I gave you decent enough material to chew on there.
Oh, yeah, Kylan. Urzen, why don't you go first? Who do you think Mr. Suzuki best compares given that group?
Kylan, I think that is a phenomenal question. I really like those choices, too. I'm a huge Stan Hansen fan. Probably out of those guys, I'm going to go with Samoa Joe, mainly because Joe, especially in his Ring of Honor days, worked a fairly shoot stiff style, not exactly like what Minoru Suzuki does, but of the choices you gave, probably the closest. That's why I'm gonna go Samoa Joe.
And I would go with, just so we don't overlap, because I would have went with Joe for the same reason. I'll go with the Loose Cannon, because his act was something where you were always you're always uneasy with Suzuki. You're not quite sure, even though he does a really good job and he's known for his professionalism, he's also known to be professionally unprofessional. What I mean by that is, while it looks like he's not working with his opponent, he is. And that difference is what makes the matches awesome. However, the side effect of that is he also makes you work for it, because he's going to stretch you. He's going to put you in uncomfortable situations, and he's going to make sure his stuff looks good. So if you're a young boy, we haven't talked about one of the best / scariest things about Suzuki. If you're a young boy, you get the Stan Hansen treatment, because he's going to chuck you. He's going to kick. If you're a fan, he's going to throw guardrails at you. If you're a cop, he might hit you with a guardrail. So that sort of unpredictability is something I think that you can – he's predictably unpredictable, if I can, again, mess around a little bit with the wordplay.
Oh, by the way, I just remember my last one was Terry Funk.
Oh, well, shoot. Yeah, I'd go – because Funk fits all of that stuff perfectly. He works with you when you think he isn't. His violence, the ability for people to be engrossed by who he is and what he's doing. Yeah, I'm all about the Funkster.
That makes sense. Are you still sticking with Samoa Joe, Urzen, or have you changed your mind?
No, I'm fully confident, 100%. Samoa Joe, that's where I'm at. Although I do love all the wrestlers you mentioned, I'm sticking with Samoa Joe.
Okay. My second question on our topic of Minoru Suzuki here is, if Kenny Omega does not capture the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, as has been predicted by many people from Okada at some point, do you suppose that Minoru Suzuki will be the person that is selected to take the IWGP title off of Okada when he loses?
Oh, I mean, for me, I would love it, but I just can't call it, because I think the biggest story on Urzen can kind of give you a little bit of a 411 on it. The biggest story going on right now in New Japan is the rise back to the top for Kenny, yes, but also the continued rehabilitation of Tetsuya Naito, because his loss to Okada is also looming. And so is that going to be the story they try to tell? Is it him getting back up to the top? Is it him winning G1 and trying to have a rematch? Is it Kenny being in the picture, and he's the one defending against Okada at the Wrestle Kingdom show? Urzen, what do you think about the chances? I know we talked about it a little bit, but specifically the chances for Suzuki to kind of claim the IWGP in the next year.
Yeah, and anybody that wants to hear me go into more detail on this, you could tune into the my podcast, the NJPW Lioncast on Thursdays. Pre-Dominion, we're going to go way deep into this. But, I think the story right now for me is really Okada. And I think that people are getting distracted with Kenny and New Japan's expansion into the United States. The story for me is really Okada and and his vanquishing of all comers. I don't think Minoru's in the picture post-Dominion. He's having fun with the Intercontinental title right now. And as Rich said, I think Naito is the next in line. But as I said before, I wish that we could sneak Suzuki in there at some point, but I just don't see it right now.
Yeah. And for my final question, we're going to do a slightly more centralized version of my first question, which one heel currently in WWE do you think style-wise most resembles Minoru Suzuki?
Oh, wow. That is a good one.
Well, Rich is probably going to have to go solo on this because I don't watch the WWE, so I am completely uninformed and cannot really give a good answer to that question. So, Rich, take it away.
Oh, yeah, right. You have said that both weeks on your show. So that's kind of stupid for me to ask of you, but that's okay.
No. Nothing stupid, man. That's totally cool. I don't watch it, but I know Rich knows about it. So Rich, what you have to say about that?
I would say the biggest I would say for me, let's see, I'm trying to think of a good corollary. For me, it's going to be Samoa Joe currently. Maybe because of the age and the ability to mix shoot fighting in with everything else. I classify Taker in like generations. So the shoot Taker, when he started using Hell's Gate, and really Brock would be the best corollary, especially given his background with UFC, the post UFC Brock. Because that guy's been more of the "you enter my world when you wrestle me" more than a traditional wrestling match.
That makes sense. Rich, it was a pleasure as usual. Erson, I'm really enjoying your Lioncast. Keep up the great work, and maybe one day if one of your co-host is unavailable, I'd be happy to join you if you need a fill-in.
Thank you, sir. Absolutely. God bless. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. That was Mr. Kylan, and always a pleasure to have Kylan on the air. Always has good questions, helps you think. And before we go too far, I'm going to take another break because it's about that time. And when we come back, Erson and I are going to talk about the future of Mr. Suzuki, especially given his age, questions I have had submitted to me, and, of course, you. So sit tight, and we will continue having some fun here on The Deep Dive.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solid Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. You see, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
Son. Monster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, The Salamonster Sounds Off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive with Hurston and Rich. We are talking Minoru Suzuki. We're talking New Japan. We're talking to you. Make sure you give us a ring, area code 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. So, Hurston, I kind of previewed it before we went to break, but what do you think his future is? Obviously, at this point in his career, we're looking at a man that is pushing 49. He'll be 50 in July. How much more do you think this warhorse has in him? And where would you want to see him kind of like when it's all said and done? Do you think he's a good trainer? Do you think he's a guy you'd rather see as a promoter? What do you think the future of a Minoru Suzuki would be in your ideal world?
Also, too, something that comes to mind when you say that, and I've been thinking it this whole time, have we ever seen a professional wrestler at 50 work at the caliber of Suzuki? I mean, I know there's been, of course. I don't think so. I mean, I know there's been guys that, of course, worked, you know, past, you know, 50 and past, but I just don't know at this kind of level. It's crazy. What do I see him doing? Wow, I don't really know. Training, possibly going into some kind of backstage role, promoting. That's all possibilities. I don't see him having. I think when he retires, I don't think we're gonna see him anymore. You know, like I don't think he's gonna have any sort of on camera role or anything. When he's done, he's going to be backstage, and they'll pull him out like when it's his birthday and stuff, you know. But
You don't see him as the mysterious GM to show up anytime soon.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I don't want the fans who are listening to the show to think that that's a possibility, because I really don't think that it is. I think when he's done, and we just won't see him anymore. I hope that he doesn't become a New Japan dad. I don't really want to see that, you know. I don't want to see him do that. I want to see him go out and but afterwards, I'm sure he's too good and talented to not be involved in some Japanese company some sort of way. So there's definitely – he's going to do something. I don't really know what that would be, but definitely he'll do – I don't think he's going to go sit at the house, you know?
Yeah, no Suzuki flakes or no, like – you're not going to see him, like, in the diet somewhere like Hiroshi Hase. Or even, you know, we got to see at Joey Janela's spring break, Great Sasuke. I mean, you have Sasuke and Hase as, like – legislators, and that blows my mind, man. Like, it's right. Wild. So what do you think? For me personally, I think you're right. I see him as a guy who's going to wind up being – he could be a heck of a trainer, because, again, he has that lineage back to Gotch, and that's something that very few people have. And when you realize he's almost 50, that's why. You know, he came in that perfect time where he is that bridge between old and new with professional wrestling. So you have a guy who can kind of show you the old ways. And as you know, Cyrus always mentions during Killing the Town, he's also a person that you never want to, in pre-match, take his invitation to get in the ring and roll around a little bit, because he will take a liberty or two. And again, it goes back to, he's going to keep the Minoru Suzuki mystique alive. So that means either you're going to go with it or you're going to take it. Either way, it's going to happen. So when you're a young boy and you're trying to go into there, it's a dangerous world.
I don't know if you've seen this, Rich, and for the listeners out there, if they haven't seen it, one of my friends recently, I didn't see this, and maybe you have, and maybe I'm just like way behind, but I guess a few weeks ago, one of my friends texted me a clip. It's on YouTube, and it's Minoru Suzuki slapping. I don't know what the name that she used outside of the WWE, but it's Asuka.
Yeah, kind of. So it was a tag match between Minoru Suzuki and I can't remember the other woman versus Kana and Fujiwara.
And he is just like literally slapping her around like a grown man.
Yeah, it's wild because that match, she essentially was like, you give me your best shot. And he does it. Like she even tries to give one of her kicks, I think, if I remember correctly, before the slap. And he kind of laughs it off and then destroys her.
I'd gained, if I didn't have enough respect for her pre-WWE work, which I'd seen some matches, but I wasn't super familiar. But the matches that I did see of hers, I thought they were really, really excellent. And when I saw that, I was like, wow, this girl is, she's something special to take this.
Yeah. I mean, if you look, I mean, someone put a clip on Twitter and someone was putting it up under the guise of, man, you guys are soft if you don't think this is good wrestling. And it was kind of, they had a reality TV show in Japan that covered one of the women's promotions trainees. And they showed how the trainees had to deal with taking like drop kicks and all this other stuff. And the one trainee gave like 15 crappy drop kicks to her trainer. And each time she was landing in a way where if the trainer was not paying attention or if she was a little tired, she would break her arm or fall on her neck and mess herself up. And the trainer gave her one shoot drop kick to the face as a, hey, what are you doing? And hand to God, I've never seen someone like die by shut drop kick before until that moment. And it was like, because she kicked her, and as soon as the young lady got up, her face was bloody. And it was like, I hurt you, but you would have hurt yourself 10 times more if I give you a career of wrestling this way. And that's how they do it. And that's how a guy like Suzuki wrestles. That's how a guy like Suzuki trains. And so it's, I say that to say, when you look at a woman like Kana or Asuka now, she's a tough cookie. She is not someone you wanted to mess around with. And that match is a great example of it. And part of me, when I first saw that match, I was like, hey, whoa, come on, Suzuki. Let's pump the brakes. But he would have been insulting her if he did anything but his best.
Yeah,
and so I appreciate that.
Slightly back to your caller's questions about people that resemble Minoru Suzuki, do you feel that now that Minoru is getting up, you know, around 50, do you feel that Zack Sabre is kind of in line to take this mantle of excellent shoot fight gimmick person? I'm sorry for not having a better adjective.
I'm with you on it. I think he is that guy who can be the straw that stirs the drink, so to speak, in terms of that world. Because he has – now, the only thing with Zach is the believability factor. I know there's a lot of people I talk to that respect, and I love them. I mean, when we did it with Alan is a fan, so am I. But there are some people who can't get over his size, and they hold it against them when it comes to the whole package of Zack Sabre Jr. And I think for Minoru Suzuki, you don't have that issue. You see Minoru, and he's a bad dude. If you don't think he's a bad dude, just wait a minute. He will show you why he's a bad dude. And so Zack can carry a little bit of the legacy. I always say he's like the adopted murder son Minoru never thought he could have, like in a sitcom. But the catch is going to be, can Zack put a little weight on, or is it going to get to a point where he's so believable by way of his matches and his participation in Suzuki-gun that it earns the respect of the people who can't see it past his slight size and build.
And yeah, just to kind of sum up our marking out love of Minoru Suzuki, you know, Rich, I mean, you've been watching professional wrestling forever, as have I, as have most of the people that are listening to us right now. And that's kind of what I judge a wrestling match by when I go to give something like 5 stars or 10 stars or whatever, is when you can get me, like, I know it's a work, but if you can get me to forget about that for a second and buy into the believability of it for a split second, then, you know, you're really doing something. And Minoru Suzuki, absolutely, when he's at his best, he absolutely does that without question.
Yeah, he is the guy I always think of when you hear Jim Cornette, you hear like our own Bruce Mitchell talk about watching wrestling back in the day, and you'd be in the crowd and there'd be that guy's like, yeah, sure, this stuff's fake, but this mofo right here, he's real. That's Suzuki. He's the guy you can always point to if you want to see a Toru Yano match. Hey, this seems a little silly for my taste. I'd rather have something a little bit more down the earth. Well, okay, here's this guy. And you're like, well, crap. Can we like not watch him murder people, please? It's like, well, you want it real, you're going to get real.
And there's so many, I get so much feedback on Suzuki. I mean, I don't know anybody that does not enjoy Minoru Suzuki. You know, I mean, he may not be your favorite wrestler or whatever, but nobody dislikes Minoru Suzuki. Everybody waits to see what in the hell he's going to do. You know, and that's just that's the joy of him. I mean, he's a pleasure to watch. He really is. I mean, that's my utmost. That's one of the greatest things I can say about a wrestler is it's a pleasure to watch him work a match, and that's Suzuki. It's just a pleasure to watch him work. It really is.
I mean, shoot, I was fired up when I found out he was going to be at WrestleCon, and then Bloodsport. When I knew he was coming to Bloodsport, that kind of sucked me in. I was like, all right, pardon the pun, I'm all in on going to this show. And then, lo and behold, we go to WrestleCon, and he's the surprise tag partner in a match there. And so now I'm like, wait a minute, double Suzuki? My heart. And, you know, now you add in, by the time that weekend was done, I'd seen 3 live Minoru Suzuki matches, and seeing that man up close was – again, it was a pleasure. It was a treat because you're just – he takes it seriously. He doesn't care if he's in front of 15 people or 50,000. He's going to give you your money's worth. And there's
and
a lot
the
to be said.
Because
of
the ERA.
Yeah, that is worth its weight in gold. I mean, shoot. If you told me they had – and I got to take a picture with him where he was smiling and it wasn't because he was choking me out, so – there was that. That was my goal. I was like, make sure Minoru Suzuki. I was like, should I ask him to choke me? Nah, he might actually do it. Then I'd have to be in the hospital, and that might be a good story, but I'd miss wrestling. But yeah, so let me. Looking at the clock here. Let me take one more break, and when we come back, we're gonna finish up with you guys. If you have any calls, hit 1 on the touch tone and make sure we get you in, and we'll be back here on the Deep Dive.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive with Ursula and Rich. We are chatting about Minoru Suzuki, the greatness of the man. We're coming down to the closing stretch, and we want to hear from you. So make sure you give us a call at area code 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. We have a caller, 267. Just put his hand up, put his hand down. Oh, up. All right, 267, state your name, where you're calling from, and thanks for calling the Deep Dive.
My name is Christian from Philadelphia.
Hi, Christian. How are you? And what can we answer for you?
All right. I was wondering, because the first time I watched Japanese wrestling was when WCW had it with them with the cross promotion. And I was wondering, what went wrong?
Oh, well, that's a good question. For me, I mean, this, and that might even be a deep dive unto itself. And I'm gonna thank you for the call. I think the big thing for me was you had Muda. Muda got over. Muda was great. But for everyone else, when you had the cross promotion, with the language barrier, you have to present the wrestlers in a way that they're seen as legit. And I think at times there wasn't enough time, or there wasn't enough attention paid to some of the other wrestlers. In that era, for instance, I'm thinking of like when you go to New Japan with the WCW series, you had a Hase, but when they did the tag tournament, it's just, oh, these mysterious guys, they're kind of good. Yada, yada. It isn't as effective as explaining like, this is a bad dude. Here's what they're doing. And Jim Ross tried, but there's only so much you can do without the company kind of being 100% behind. Does that ring a bell? Do you remember the era back then? And I'm talking more like the early 90s, not like the Nitro era where it became this international intrigue all across the board.
Yeah, you're talking about when they would actually go to Japan and do like cross promotional shows and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's just that I don't really think that was a high priority. And we could go into all the reasons why it wasn't a top priority for them. I think that's just the answer. You know, I mean, I think they were using those guys for what they, you know, they had a purpose for what they wanted to use them for. Like you said, you had a couple of them that got over, like Muda, and a lot of them didn't. And for whatever reason, again, like you said, you know, I mean, that's a big topic. I mean, that's a lot to chew on, but just trying to give like my hot take answer, it just wasn't pushing Japanese wrestlers and Japanese style wrestling just was not a priority for the company at that time.
And let me make sure. Chris, did that help answer your question? And did you have any other questions for us before we roll out of here?
Yes, I have like three questions, if that's all right.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, the first question. Do you agree that the Bound for Glory one with the Japanese show was a failure? Or what's your opinion on that one?
Oh, man, that's another one where if WCW was a mistake of timing and like wrong place, wrong time in terms of arranging things, TNA's entire relationship with New Japan in that era was, oh my God, what did you do? And the reason I say that is you had all of these guys. You had Tanahashi, Okada, down the road. They, right before the relationship got a little wonky, they had Sonata. They had all of these guys coming over from New Japan, and they did nothing with them. Okada was basically Kato to Samoa Joe's Green Hornet, and that's just unacceptable. And it was amazing to me that he used that time to understand television and understand presentation, and that helped him on his return from his excursion. But yeah, I would say from the TNA side, it was a failure. From a New Japan side, though, while Okada didn't get any notoriety, while Tanahashi was just kind of there, they got experience that could help them when they did make that leap over here to the United States.
Who do you think, in your honest opinion, is the face of New Japan Pro Wrestling right now?
Urson?
Who do you think is the face?
The face, I think the most over wrestler without question is Tetsuya Naito. That's pretty easy to see. I don't know who the face is. I think the face is different. I think in Japan, the face of New Japan is probably Naito or Okada. I think here in America, it's probably someone like Kenny Omega, just because Western fans don't really keep up with the product as well, maybe. I'm not sure, but mm-hmm. I would say Naito's the most over guy they have right now, currently.
Here's the final question. In the all-in pay-per-view, you know, the feud between Cody Rhodes and Kenny Omega, do you think this is all a big swerve like the NWO with the Wolfpack thing they did years ago? I think this is all just a big swerve and they're all paying the fans?
I don't think this will end with, like, them saying, hey, look, this whole feud was a big deal to, like, just fool the, you know, work through. No, I think the pay-per-view will kind of, if it won't have the final resolution to Kenny and Cody, it'll have something that's darn close.
Because the Bullet Club is just like the NWO.
Yeah, kinda. But I don't think they'll go with the I don't think it'll go with like you have your Elite, you have your Bullet Club OG, and then you have kind of like everything that's an ancillary part, like when Cody tried to have him make the Villain Club.
Yeah.
I do not I think that they're going to – I don't
go
think
ahead,
they're going to swerve
guys,
you, brother. They're not
going to
swerve you, brother.
I found one quick thing. I found a little thing online that said that the reason why Cody Rhodes quit was because WWE denied a gimmick that he wanted instead of Stardust. Cody wanted to be a rich man gimmick, you know, like owning a company.
I think Cody was just tired of being Stardust.
Yeah. And if you get a chance, Chris, I would say definitely take a listen to the latest Edge and Christian show where they have Cody on and he talks about some of the issues he dealt with after his dad died and how that was a bad scene. And then it tied into his decision to leave because it was kind of like the rocket fuel that gave him the impetus to kind of want to leave. But thank you. Please call back again. We welcome you to the deep dive whenever you want to appear. Since we're short on time, I did shut down the call. But again, like I said, you're welcome to come back. Urson, before we get out of here, thank you again. This was awesome. I had a ball doing this. Where can folks find you on the internet, and where can they find any of your work, both in the Torch family and outside of it, if you have anything you want to show off?
Rich, thank you so much for having me, man. I really, really appreciate it. I appreciate everybody for listening. You can find me on Twitter at Ursin Darosh. That's at URSIN. I'll be the first person, the only person that pops up. And that's me, and I'll probably spam you with cat photos. So if you don't want to follow my personal Twitter, my podcast, the Twitter is at PWT. Lioncast, and that is all NJPW info, no spam. And you can go to pwtorch.com right now and read my written reports on the latest Ring of Honor shows and listen to my VIP podcast covering the world of New Japan professional wrestling. Thank you, Brother Rich, for having me. It has been my pleasure.
Oh, it's been my pleasure as well, too, Urson. You folks will hear from him soon. We're going to have another show. Urson was kind enough to kind of jump into the batter's cage, batting box, whatever crappy analogy I've now failed at using. But he came off the bench, threw a couple of touchdowns, and now, you know, people are going to have him in the newspapers. Who is this guy? He's magnificent. Definitely watch his Twitter. The cat photos are hilarious. Listen to the show. I am a big person on bandwidth, and there's only so many things I can do. And listening to a guy like Urson talk about New Japan, the passion he had, talking with him and Alan Forel about it was awesome. And so thank you guys for partaking in this Day of Suzuki greatness. As always, you can find me on Twitter at @rich_fan. You can find the show with the hashtag Deep Dive, and as always, dive into something new, challenge yourself, put yourself in a situation where you can go beyond where you think you can go. And until next time, before we get out of here, I want to tell you about the VIP, where you can listen to things like the PW Torch Lioncast. It's a great program. Not only am I a member of the staff, but I'm also a client. So sit back, listen to these details from the boss man, and we'll see you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.
Yeah.